Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories, where we play tales to take you away from today. On the podcast today, we have some really good stuff.
Oh, really?
Yep, we have some breaking news, an unwanted car sitter, a creepy hiking story, and Lamar from Detroit is being followed by ghosts.
That does sound good.
Jason Dowd joins me on the Horror Express to talk about the future plans for that podcast. And we have a short story about the people of Mars.
No way.
So, let's get it all going with this story from Neil, the voodoo doctor.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by the power of the organ. The organ can produce so many wonderful sounds that it should come as no surprise that old-time radio would use them. But that's not the only reason, and I'll tell you more later on.
Come on, Mary, let's take a turn on the Ferris wheel. We haven't done that in years.
I think I'm too winded to go another step. You go on alone and I'll wait here.
Nothing doing.
Oh, Sheriff! Sheriff, please!
Hey, somebody calling me.
That man there, Henry. Coming this way.
Oh, Sheriff! Oh, gee, I'm mighty glad I found you, sir.
Hey, what's the matter, Rube? Something wrong?
Johnny Clare, the star aerialist over in the Big Top. She was just found murdered in her tent.
Now let's get this straight. Cause of death, strangulation. Grease paint smears on her throat and several small fresh scratches on the palms of her hands. Costume also grease smeared.
Well, what do you say, Sheriff? We can't keep the crowd waiting in the Big Top all day.
As company manager, what do you think? It's kind of upset your show, doesn't it?
Why don't you talk to the voodoo doctor? He was the last one with her.
Might be a good idea. Which one's he?
Well, he's right over there, Sheriff, the one in all the paint.
Ah, so you're the voodoo doctor?
Yes, sir, I am.
What's your name? What do I call you besides voodoo doctor?
Just call me Neil.
Urban here tells me that you might be able to throw some light on the murder of Miss Clare.
Urban, eh? I thought so. Why, you...
No rough stuff there. Now talk, Neil. Don't feel like it. Well, Urban, suppose you tell me what you know.
Well, Sheriff, just before the show started, I saw the voodoo doctor sneak away from Dottie's tent.
Dressed just as he is in costume.
Grease from head to foot. I waited until he passed and then looked into Dottie's tent. She was dead.
And you think that Neil, the voodoo doctor...
killed Dottie? I'm sure of it. I heard him threaten her.
That's a lie. Dottie asked me to come to her tent, but she was dead when I got there.
Did you touch anything?
Not a thing. I'm not so crazy as to leave fingerprints on somebody else's dirty work.
Does everyone in the show use the same grease paint that you have on, Neil?
No, I'm the only one. As a voodoo, I have to paint up like this.
Well, if you and Urban were the only humans to be near the body before she was murdered...
And he's your man, Sheriff.
I don't think so, Urban. I think you're in for a little surprise. You see, I'm holding you for the murder of Dottie Clare.
Why did the sheriff arrest Urban, the show's manager, for the murder of his aerialist? In a moment, we'll hear, but first...
The voodoo doctor. Okay, that one made me smile just a bit. Also, I love the line, "As voodoo, I have to paint up like this." Classic. Well, I, for one, liked the voodoo doctor for this, but the sheriff doesn't think so, and I'm sure he has his reasons. Let's head back and see why, and yes, I will get to that organ tidbit pretty soon.
And now, back to our story.
You're crazy, Sheriff. You ain't got one piece of evidence against me.
Haven't I, though? Listen, you claim it was Neil that came out of the tent after Dottie Clare was murdered. Neil's torso and his face and hands are covered with grease paint.
It's all over the dead girl's costume, too, ain't it? What more could you want?
Just something you overlooked, Urban. Anyone struggling with him would have grease paint all over his own hands, too. But the only marks on Dottie's hands were scratches. This is proof enough that Dottie Claire did not struggle with your voodoo man, as you said. And consequently, he couldn't have strangled her. Now, Urban, looks like you slipped up that time. And that slip is going to cost you your life.
Well, a real lack of evidence there, but I'm okay with it. Now, why did OTR love the organ so much? Well, it turns out theater organs were widely used in silent films during their era, 1910s through the 1920s. After talkies replaced the silent movies, practically every movie theater got rid of their organs, which were now obsolete. The organs were then purchased relatively cheaply by churches, museums, and of course, old-time radio stations. So, how about that? Well, I have to say I have some pretty big news this week. I'm very excited to tell you that Ron's Amazing Stories has a brand new sponsor, Audible.com. I've been trying to get them to sponsor the show since 2015. I've been rejected every time and was beginning to think that it would never happen. I tried again this past week and was given the green light to become a member of their Audible's Creators Affiliate Program. What does this mean to you? Well, I'll be rolling out a campaign for this next week, but my plan is to redo the featured story segment and have Audible sponsor that. Now, what is Audible? Well, Audible is the world's largest seller and producer of audiobooks and other spoken word entertainment. They have opened the world to us by producing quality books that you can listen to anywhere. They have reinvented the media category and is the driving force behind today's audio entertainment revolution. I've been a member of Audible since the year 2000. The first book I ever bought from them was The Greatest Science Fiction Stories of the 20th Century. Truly wonderful book. I bought that on September 1st of 2000. At that time, I was a commuter, spending up to 3 hours a day driving to and from work. Audiobooks were my life. They helped pass the time and took me to places that I could only imagine. I actually looked forward to the drive home, as weird as that sounds. My most recent purchase was the complete trilogy, The Shannara Series, by Terry Brooks. If you've not read or heard Terry's books, you're missing out on some fantastic stories. These epic tales chronicle the life of the Ohmsford family facing off against the Mord race, whose plan it is to destroy all of mankind. It truly is an epic tale and worth investing your time in. Heck, it has even been made into a successful television series that is currently available on Netflix. So, want to get a jump on this new program? I'm still learning the details of all this, but there is something you can do right now to take advantage of our new relationship. Go to ronsamazingstories.com, and in this week's show notes, I will have a special link to Audible. Click on this link, and you will be given the opportunity to get a free audiobook and a month free trial of Audible. Try it out. See if it works for you, and you get to keep the book for just taking a chance on it. How about that? Now, many of you might be asking, but Ron, what about Gladys Goodies? Well, I'm happy to say that Gladys Goodies is staying with us as well. I plan to have them sponsor a segment on the show, and we'll be getting that done soon as well. Also, I want you to know that I will not turn this podcast into a huge advertising event. But I do have to pay the bills, and the costs keep going up. My business just lost a pretty big client, and hosting this show costs money. While I love providing everything for free, I can only do that if I take on a few sponsors to help me along the way. Your support and understanding is much appreciated. Well, enough of this stuff. Here are your stories. first story comes from Mac Hess Stone, 25. Max writes us from Shelley, Idaho, and he, or she, calls this The Stranger in the Car. I love the podcast, and I listen every week. Feel free to change anything like spelling and grammar. Also, my school email doesn't receive emails, not in my district, so don't bother trying to reply. Well, Max, I didn't try, but here is your story. About twice a week, my mom will go running with her friend. On one of these days, my mom drove to the park a little earlier than her friend. As she was looking for a place to park, she spotted one near the bathrooms. But when she went to park, there was a man staring at her in shorts and a hoodie. My mom had a bad feeling, so instead she drove a little further and found another spot to park. She started putting on her shoes and getting ready for the run when she saw her friends pull up next to her. My mom got out of the car and gave her friend a quick hug. She locked the car with the keys, but instead of the normal click of the lock, the car beeped. It does that when a door is left open. Then my mom looked back at the car, and the man in the hoodie and shorts was sitting in the passenger seat with the door open. My mom yelled at the man, "What are you doing in my car?" He said, "Oh, you're not the lady that said I could wait in her car?" Still angry, my mom said, "No, get out of my car." The man got out and simply walked away. When he was out of sight, my mom and her friend drove about another half a mile away and did their run there. Max from Shelley, Idaho. Well, Max, maybe not all that exciting, but that is a crazy story. I'm very happy that your mom was safe and that the crazy man just walked off. I once had a similar experience. I was at a local mall and always liked to park on the upper tier of the car garage. There's always spots up there. I was sitting in my car when a guy came up running at me wearing the mask from the movie Scream. He began pounding on the hood of my car and demanded money. I looked at this guy and realized, A, he's probably stoned out of his mind, and B, he was just over 5 feet tall. I'm just over 6 feet, and at that time was taking Taekwondo. I got out of the car and politely told him, "Please stop assaulting my vehicle." He did stop, took one look at me. For the record, I was standing there like a Chuck Norris lookalike. Turned tail and ran away. Now, this could be the end of the story, but he ran headlong into a security guard who clocked him with an outstretched arm. He crumpled to the ground, and it is my hope that he got the help he needed. Thank you for your story, Max. It was a good one. Our next story comes by way of Facebook. Paula Hale from Tuckwillow Park, Washington, writes us. "Ron, your show is amazing, as the name tells us. My husband and I are newly retired and are living the dream. Each week, we sit down and listen to your unusually entertaining programming. Please keep it coming and tell us more stories. I do have a tale that I want to share. I hope that you can use it on the show, Paula." Well, Paula, as you can see, I did, and without any further ado, here is your creepy story. This past winter, we hiked the Ho River Trail and camped out overnight. Everything was fine the entire first day we were there. We had a great night's sleep and woke up early to hike back to the parking area. On the way back down the trail, my husband and I noticed that someone else had been hiking as well. About a mile after walking, we stopped and saw our names, first and last, had been drawn into the snow on the side of the footpath. I didn't do it, neither did my husband. It was snowing a bit through the night, and it looked as if it had been drawn the day before. We got a bit freaked out and decided to hustle back to our car so that we could get out of there. We finally got to the parking area, and I went to sign us both out of the registry book. When I turned the page to where we had signed in, I saw that someone had scribbled out all of our information so that you couldn't read it anymore. No one else had signed into or out of the book. but us for the past 3 days. I will not be going back there. Paula Hale, Tukwila Park, Washington. Wow, Paula, that truly is a freaky tale, and I too would think twice about going back. I decided to do a little research on your trail, and I found this blog post, 12 Top-Rated Hiking Trails in the Olympic National Park, by Brad Lane. It is dated January 16th, 2019. One of the few and finest of temperate rainforest in the United States is the Hoh Rainforest. It is one of the most popular places to visit in the Olympic National Park. Located in the southwest region, the Hoh Rainforest receives roughly 12 feet of precipitation each year, with the heaviest downpours occurring between October and April. The result is a lush, forested landscape of plants upon plants, including an abundance of ferns, mosses, and nearly every shade of green you can possibly imagine. Giant Sitka spruce and western hemlock add to the ethereal environment of the Hoh Rainforest, including their canopies, which tower more than 300 feet into the air. One of the many great ways to experience the Hoh River Forest can be found on the 14.4-mile Hoh River Trail. Following the banks of the glacial-fed Hoh River, this iconic hiking trail caters towards family-friendly day hikes and overnight adventures. The first 13 miles of the Hoh River Trail are relatively flat as the path navigates the sights, sounds, and overwhelming presence of the rainforest. For day hikes, visitors can tour this part of the trail as far as they like before heading back. For overnight adventures, permits required, the trail continues gaining sufficient elevation before reaching its terminus at the base of Mount Olympus and its Blue Glacier. That truly does sound like a place I would love to visit. I also looked into if there were any scary stories from that region. I found this one from the very same area that you were hiking. This post comes from the website Reddit by Zuzu of the Wolves approximately 10 months ago. I'm doing seasonal work in the Olympic National Park this summer and live in the employee housing on the same property as my job. Throughout the summer, I've heard things like giggles coming from my empty room and a sliding door closing on its own. One night about a month ago, something wild happened. The building I lived in is backed up against an impenetrable coastal rainforest, and some friends and I were sitting in one of the apartments chatting when we all heard screaming coming from the woods. Initially, we thought it was a cougar, but then it kept going and it was decidedly human-sounding. Sometimes it seemed more like sobbing, and other moments it was a frantic yelling. It went on for about 5 intense minutes and then stopped. Now, the truly chilling part. About 30 seconds after the yelling stopped, what sounded like a disembodied woman's voice started coming through the walls, muttering right next to where we were sitting. We couldn't make out what she was saying, and it only lasted a few seconds. It was in the room with us, but we couldn't see anything. One of my friends opened the door to make sure that nobody was outside, and we were completely alone. It should also be noted that everyone that lives in the buildings were in the very same room, so all of the other units were empty as well. All of us who live here have puzzled over any logical explanation for what could have happened, and we just can't seem to find one. Well, Paula, I know I added a bit to your story, but I thank you for allowing me to do some extra research. The last story for this week is one that Lamar Dunn from Detroit told me. Lamar opted to have me write his story, so I had the pleasure to hear it in his own words on the telephone. Thank you, Lamar. This story occurred while I was still in school. I attended Henry Ford High School on the north side of Detroit. I was working at a grocery store with this co-worker who claimed that most of the women in her family, including her, could see ghosts. She asked me not to tell anyone because she didn't think that they would believe her and she didn't want to be bullied. I asked her why she told me, and she said that she felt like she could trust me. She said, "You have this white aura that surrounds you, and it brings me peace." We became good friends, and she would tell me stories about the ghosts that followed her sometimes, including family members who had died way before she was born. One day I asked her if ghosts were following me, and she told me that she wasn't going to tell me. I started to get a little anxious because my dad had died a year prior, and I guess part of me wanted to know if it was him. Eventually, I told her about the death in my family, and if there was a spirit following me, could she describe what it looked like? I didn't tell her who died in my family. She hesitated for a moment and then told me that something does follow me around. It was multiple entities, and they're different every day. She also said that sometimes some of them would come back. She told me that they were all drawn to my light. She didn't want to tell me because she was worried that it would scare me. She refused to tell me what they looked like, saying, "You really don't want to know." To this day, I still don't know. She tells me that she thinks I may be a type of conduit which they are drawn to on their way to the real light. I don't know what that means or what to think of all of this. I will say that ever since I was a little boy, I have always felt that something was staring at me, but I just thought I was being paranoid. My friends believe the story and said that they always feel at peace when I'm around. Lamar Dunn, Detroit, Michigan. Well, Lamar, I can honestly say that we've never had a story like yours on the show before. I'll also say that I've talked to a lot of people on the phone. You are one of the most genuine and kindest people I have chatted with to date. I thoroughly enjoyed talking with you, and I hope I told your story just right. If there is anyone out there that has any thoughts on what Lamar is going through, please let us know. We want to know. Do you have a story that you want to tell on the show? If you do, we want to hear it. It can be about any subject and from any genre. Heck, it doesn't even have to be true. Original fiction or stories from the public domain are very welcome. To submit them, just head to ronsamazingstories.com and click on the Story Submissions banner. Fill out the form and soon your story will be heard. Have a story but don't want to write it? That's okay too. Just leave your contact information, a brief description of your story, and I'll get right back to you. We can write it together. However, if you don't do it, your story remains just that, your story. Why not make it our story?
As we pull into Death Station.
Hello, this is the conductor, and I want to welcome you to this edition of the Horror Express. Well, I know that Ron and Jason have some stuff Wait a minute. Over there, Jason is sitting all by himself. I'll just have to go over and talk to him. Just a moment. And maybe we'll find out what's going on. Hello, Jason. How are you?
Oh, it's you. I thought you were dead.
Oh, I am very dead.
I know. What do you want?
I heard that we're going to be seeing more of you two on the train. That you're going to be doing a monthly edition of the Horror Express. Where is Ron anyway?
He's in the dining car getting coffee.
Oh, that's not coffee. I mean, oh well. So you're going to be doing more of the Horror Express shows then?
Yes, we are going to do shorts once a month and a huge show at Halloween.
Oh, the naked zombies in Car 8 will be so happy about that. They just love the show.
Ah, yeah. Ew.
I know what you mean. Well, how about a hug for old time's sake?
Oh, look! There's Ron. I should probably help him with his coffee.
Suit yourself. Maybe later?
Much later.
Well, we're here, Jason, and we're starting a whole new chapter of the Horror Express.
That's right. Isn't this exciting?
I think it's going to be great. Part of the reason that we had so much trouble doing the Horror Express is the amount of effort and time it takes to put it together and get everything right. And if there's guests, it even becomes more complicated. And I think these shorter versions and then doing one major show a year, maybe more if it works out, but at least right now, one major show a year, I think people are going to love this.
I think so, too. And you know what? This is going to make it like the Twitter version of the show. So that means you got to keep it short, sweet, simple, to the point, get out, right? Plus that, we don't really want to sit around with the conductor and everything for too long. He smells.
I hear you. I hear you, man. He does have an odor or two or three. All right. Well, I know that I sent you some questions. Do you want to just jump in right with the questions and then maybe chat a little bit afterwards?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get to these. I mean, I know that they've been waiting for a while, so I'm glad we can finally answer some of these things for it. Hey, guys, love the show and wish there were more of them. I think you have a hit on your hands. I agree. I have a neighbor who is kind of creepy. We don't get along, and she says that my dog is pooping on her lawn. I have tried to tell her I do not have a dog, but she won't listen. She leaves nasty notes and sends the police to my door all the time because of the noise. I live alone and work nights. The other day, she said that if I don't stop, she's going to curse me. I think that just a little silly and shrugged it off. Should I be worried about it? And that was from Mark Davis 017, which was posted on the blog. Well, I got my answer. How about you?
Well, you want me to start off?
Yeah, go ahead.
I would not be worried. I really think this is a crotchety old woman and she's just doing it to get a rise out of him. But having said that, I'm sure that you're going to have a little bit different take on it. So why don't you go ahead?
I also believe that you don't have to worry about this. But what I do realize is that when you're dealing with anything in the paranormal field or anything like that, there is a difference between paranormal and stuff that is caused by mental illnesses. I believe that this woman has a mental illness. Being that, if she did try to do a curse or something, I can almost guarantee you it wouldn't be done right. And usually when you don't do a curse right, it comes to the person that tried to do the curse in the first place. So if anything, that would be like pointing a gun backwards at herself, trying to shoot you with it, and the bullet goes back towards her. So I really don't see that this would be a big, major, major problem. And I wouldn't worry about it at all. I would just chalk it up as the lady's crazy and obviously has some type of mental illness or something that's causing her to even think that way.
All right, so let's take the other side of it since neither one of us think this is a problem. Let's just, for a moment, consider the fact that she does have some paranormal power and can actually cast a curse. Is there anything that he could do to protect himself just in case?
There's a couple of things, but it kind of depends on the curse that she's going to be putting on you. I personally don't believe in curses still. I do believe that you can mentally manifest it if you were told it, which could cause that to happen. So I would say if you don't believe in curses...
Ignore it.
Yeah, ignore it. The other part is that if you really want to do something a little bit more detective for yourself, there is a thing called hematite. You can get a piece of hematite and put it on each corner of your house. That's an anti-hexing rock. You can pretty much get them anywhere where there's a metaphysical store. You can get them on Amazon, all kinds of different places. You can also wear a crystal, which is used to absorb a lot of energy, especially negative energy around you, produce positive, you know, good luck or positive vibes in your way to help erase the negative stuff. But if it's something demonic or they do something with voodoo, then you'd have to find somebody that would know what they're talking about. But usually before they can just curse you in some way, shape, or form, they have to have something binding to you in order to bind it to you to begin with. So that'd be like a piece of hair, some type of DNA of yours somehow, some way, clothes, something personal to you. So unless she's really, you know, going through your trash can, I wouldn't worry about it too much.
What about dog poop?
Nope. And since he doesn't have a dog, it would be somebody else's dog anyway, so.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Jason and just say I don't think you have anything to worry about. But I'll tell you this much. If it is a curse, I am of the school that you have to believe in it. You have to accept it and just don't. Mm-hmm. Just write it off and say, hey, whatever you do, go ahead, but you're not going to be able to hurt me.
And that's what a curse does, really. It basically empowers it over you because you allow it to empower itself over you. So, but I would say I would be more worried about this woman going postal on somebody than anything
yeah, else. That would be my concern. On a serious note, you might want to actually start tracking and keeping notes about some of the things she says and the dates that she says them. Because if she truly is off her slide, if you have some documentation to show the police or to show, hey, this is what this person is doing, I think that that's how I would approach it. And then just go ahead and track these outbursts of hers.
Absolutely. I agree with that 110%. That's why we got smartphones and everything else nowadays. So there's a lot of ways of documenting.
Yeah. Take a picture, turn on your phone, your recording log, anything, just to capture some of her moments. And that'll do wonders for you if anything does come of it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right, Jason, I think we have one more from times past.
Yes, and this is from Frankly SPH, which
I thought that might be Spa.
It might be Spa.
I don't know.
But I'm just gonna say it so he knows who it is, in case we did it wrong. Just safe that way. But his question is for me. It says, how do I start taking creepy pictures? Can I use my phone? And do you have a how-to video?
I want to know the answer to this.
Creepy pictures stem at your imagination. So the creepier it gets depends on the amount of time that you have to make props, come up with the lighting. Lighting's key in stuff like this. And also tapping into your inner, whatever you want to call it, just trying to think theatrically, not necessarily photographically. Because theatrically is where you really get the good idea of what comes with what. If you watch a horror film that's low budget, it usually looks low budget. And it doesn't scare you. So the more that you use with props, lighting, and your surroundings, that helps it out a lot. But also getting crazy and coming up with some great ideas for the subject of it, whatever that may be. You know, I was able to take a picture of a gravesite here in Lutz, Florida, where somebody was just buried and all the flowers were still around this thing. And by just turning it, taking the picture at a strange angle, and playing with the lighting of it afterwards, it made it look like it was like right out of an 1800s funeral. So, I mean, it really gave it a creep factor just by playing with a little bit of lighting.
Well, and with today's photo software that you can get for Mac, Windows, even your phone or tablet, you can do some amazing things with the photos. I do it all the time with my art for the different shows. I like to go in and move things around, cut things out, paste them in. And it has become so much easier these days to do that. So
it's true.
So I'm going to ask the question, can I use a phone?
Actually, you can. It really doesn't matter what you use. It's how you use the photo and what you can do with the photo. So for instance, I had a shoot that I was doing called the Fallen Angel. And it was a representation of my sister that had passed away. It was like a fallen from grace type of thing. And it was something that I physically felt that she was telling me to take a picture of. Now, I had set it up that we were going to go in the woods and it was going to be roughly dark outside or near dark. And then we found out that we couldn't do it at nighttime or at dusk time. So What I had to do was I had to shoot this in the Florida sun, 12 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, if anybody knows the Florida sun, it's bright. It's very bright, and it sometimes can overwash some certain colors if you have white or anything like that on, and it can overexpose some of the picture. So I had to take this and make it creepy. How do you do that during the day? I used Photoshop, and I turned it so it looks like it was taken at nighttime. Took a lot of layers, took a lot of hard work, but when I tell people that I shot that in broad daylight, they're shocked. So you can create shadows, you can create things if you just know how to do it. Using opacities, using layers, using colors, you can blend in, you can make it a really cool effect. And that doesn't matter what you shoot it on, as long as it's in focus or as long as you're able to get the idea that you're shooting for. Now, with a phone, you're not going to get the different apertures out there. Everything's going to be identically in focus all the way across the phone. Now, when you use a regular camera, you can actually fade out or blur some of the background to give you a more theatrical effect.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
You can still do that using the software, but you're just going to have more work to do in the post edit than you would when you initially shoot it. When I shoot, I always try to make sure that I have to do very little in editing. I always want to make sure that the camera does it, but that's me.
I know that the newer iPhones, they have a what they call a portrait mode. What exactly is that?
A portrait mode makes it so that you get more of a crisp, clear face, and it kind of blurs out the background a little bit. Because you don't really want to see the background in a portrait mode. In a portrait mode, you want the subject, which is your pitch, which is the person that you're photographing, to be the subject of the picture and catch your eye. That's the problem when you don't have the ability to blend stuff out in the background. Everything catches your eye. You know what I mean? So everything becomes a focal point of the picture. And by able to blending stuff out and softening the edges, which is what you do with a portrait, you soften the edges of the face, it makes it more of a theatrical feature, and it makes the focal point what you want it to be. So if you want to focus in on the eyes that have some crazy makeup, or if you want to focus on maybe a gash or something else or whatever it may be, you can do that with portrait mode because, again, you're taking away a lot of the background and focusing on the main subject, which is the picture. If you see all these old photos that like churches or whatever like that for the church directories, the background is kind of soft. Mm-hmm. And it's done that way for a reason. And that's because you don't want to see the background. You want to see the person.
Wow, very cool. So real quickly, for those that are maybe new to the show or haven't heard about it, tell us about how we can come see some of your pictures.
Well, you can go to Imagination Art Studios. That's I-M-A-G-I-N-E Nation Art studios.com. So you got to put the S at the end. And I got a little gallery up there and stuff. And I'm actually kind of doing some fun stuff. I'm going back and remastering some of my old pictures and changing them around a little bit. So I haven't shot in a while, and that's okay. But I am taking some of those and putting a twist to it. So like I went through there, and in 2009, I did a burlesque photo shoot. I realized I could turn it kind of like a steampunk feel. So I'm starting to do some of that and putting that into it. And I didn't even know I had these pictures. I forgot about them. So it's amazing what I still have and what I haven't done. And I'm just kind of going back and having some fun with them. And my original vision for these pictures has changed, which is even cooler.
Well, we all change over time anyway. So you can take a different cut on things, on just about everything you own.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Jason, I want to take a minute now before we throw you off the train again. By the way, you know, last time you didn't get into a mailbag. How did that go?
Well, I got a couple of sticks in places that you shouldn't get sticks. So I think next time I will go in a bag, just because of the fact that I really, really like my posterior and I don't want to have any more surgery.
Well, I noticed, you know, when we closed off the show last time that he went flying out of there, and I thought, huh, he didn't go in a bag. So he's just going to fly out there and drop. Like a rock. Anyway, what I wanted to say is, Jason and I, our plan for this is to get you involved. And so we want to talk about the things that you want us to talk about. And so what I'd like you guys to do is to send in your comments, your suggestions, questions, whatever you want us to talk about on this segment, do it. Because we want to hear what you have to say. That way it becomes your segment, not just Jason and I coming up with something to talk about each week.
That's right.
What do you think of that, Jason?
I love that idea. And you know what else I'm thinking about doing? I know it may be fun, it may be completely wrong, it may be completely right. I may hit it on the mark or completely miss the wall altogether. But if somebody wants to, I do know how to do tarot card readings, and I do know how to do other readings. So if you write in, don't tell me necessarily too much, just basically your name, your question, and whatever like that. I can either do it live on the radio, or I could do it in advance and read it on the show afterwards, if you don't mind it being broadcasted.
That sounds fun.
But we can have some fun with that.
Maybe I'll take you up on that.
Sounds good.
If nobody else, and then I'll be your, the show's guinea pig for it. Not you, but the show. Okay.
See, nobody wants to stand up and break the ice, so somebody's got to do it for them, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm not afraid of you, because I know that you have my best interest in hearts, and you'll give me a great reading.
Oh, absolutely. It's not about doing it badly. There are some that will do that. There are absolutely some that will do that, and they use the negative energies. With me, I try to use the positive energies and answer a question. But the only thing you have to remember is if you ask the question, I'm going to give you the answer. It tells you. Not necessarily, this is where I was kind of conflicting between that before in a previous show that we did. Do you say it? Do you not? If it comes out, I'm going to have to say it. So just be prepared for any answer that comes.
All right. I may withdraw mine. All right. So, folks, the way we're going to do that is we're going to use the normal Ron's Amazing Stories input-output. So just go to ronsamazingstories.com, click on either the comment section or the story submission, either one will work, and leave your comments for us, your questions for us, and your suggestions for things that you want us to talk about. Mm-hmm. Sound good, Jason?
Sounds good to me. I like it.
All right. Well, I'm going to say that I think we need to make our way to the back of the train because I see Florida coming up fast. So real quickly, why don't you tell them a little bit about what you're working on right now and how they can get a hold of you?
Well, you can always check out my artwork by going to imaginationartstudios.com. And also, if you like healthy, natural dog treats, after a tragedy, which you guys have probably heard of, I was able to make a positive out of that negative, and I've been making some natural, healthy dog treats. So if you really want to get yourself something, that your dog something that they will truly love, and it's 100% healthy for them, you can go to gladdysgoodies.com, gladdysgoodies.com, and pick up your best friend something that they're going to love and make their tails wag. So go check that out if you want to. And of course, you can always get me on my Instagram or Facebook or anything like that. It's mostly Dowd Studios. And if you don't know what that is, just type in my name with Jason, D-O-W-D, and you'll find me. So
you are everywhere on the internet.
I'm everywhere.
So you have a huge following, I have found. So thank you for that, Jason.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm looking at the mailbags here, and there's only small size left.
Well, one thing you did not know about me is I am a contortionist.
I can get into anything. All right. Well, Jason, thank you for joining us on this episode of The Horror Express, and we'll see you next time.
Yep. Let's go.
Our story is one that the scientists of today should take note of. While this is a very short tale, it offers a word of warning that just can't be ignored. While we explore, we need to consider whether we should explore. The story is called Earthmen Bearing Gifts by Frederick Brown. It was first published in Galaxy magazine in June of 1960. It is read for us by Alan Winterroud.
Earthmen Bearing Gifts by Frederick Brown. Dar-Ree sat alone in his room meditating. From outside the door, he caught a thought wave equivalent to a knock, and glancing at the door, he willed it to slide open. It opened. "Enter, my friend," he said. He could have projected the idea telepathically, but with only two persons present, speech was more polite. Yijun Qi entered. "You are up late tonight, my leader," he said. "Yes, Qi. Within an hour, the Earth rocket is due to land, and I wish to see it." "Yes, I know. It will land 1,000 miles away, if their calculations are correct, beyond the horizon. But if it lands even twice that far, the flash of the atomic explosion should be visible. And I have waited long for first contact. For even though no Earthman will be on that rocket, it will still be first contact for them. Of course, our telepath teams have been reading their thoughts for many centuries, but this will be the first physical contact between Mars and Earth." Qi made himself comfortable on one of the low chairs. "True," he said. "I have not followed recent reports too closely, though. Why are they using an atomic warhead? I know they suppose our planet is uninhabited, but still..." "They will watch the flash through their lunar telescopes and get a... what do they call it? A spectroscopic analysis? That will tell them more than they know now, or think they know, much of it is erroneous, about the atmosphere of our planet and the composition of its surface. It is... call it a sighting shot, Qi. They'll be here in person within a few oppositions, and then..." Mars was holding out, waiting for Earth to come. What was left of Mars, that is. This one small city of about 900 beings. The civilization of Mars was older than that of Earth, but it was a dying one. This was what remained of it. One city, 900 people. They were waiting for Earth to make contact, for a selfish reason and for an unselfish one. Martian civilization had developed in a quite different direction from that of Earth. It had developed no important knowledge of the physical sciences, no technology. But it had developed social sciences to the point where there had not been a single crime, let alone a war, on Mars for 50,000 years. And it had developed fully the parapsychological sciences of the mind, which Earth was just beginning to discover. Mars could teach Earth much. How to avoid crime and war to begin with. Beyond those simple things lay telepathy, telekinesis, empathy. And Earth would, Mars hoped, teach them something even more valuable to Mars. How, by science and technology, which it was too late for Mars to develop now, even if they had the type of minds which would enable them to develop these things, to restore and rehabilitate a dying planet, so that an otherwise dying race might live and multiply again. Each planet would gain greatly, and neither would lose. And tonight was the night when Earth would make its first sighting shot. Its next shot, a rocket containing Earthmen, or at least an Earthman, would be at the next opposition, 2 Earth years, or roughly 4 Martian years, hence. The Martians knew this because their teams of telepaths were able to catch at least some of the thoughts of Earthmen, enough to know their plans. Unfortunately, at that distance, the connection was one way. Mars could not ask Earth to hurry its program, or tell Earth scientists the facts about Mars' composition and atmosphere, which would have made this preliminary shot unnecessary. Tonight, Re, the leader, as nearly as the Martian word can be translated, and Qi, his administrative assistant and closest friend, sat and meditated together until the time was near. Then they drank a toast to the future, in a beverage based on menthol, which had the same effect on Martians as alcohol on Earthmen, and climbed to the roof of the building in which they had been sitting. They watched towards the north where the rocket should land. The stars shone brilliantly and unwinkingly through the atmosphere. In Observatory No. 1 on Earth's moon, Raj Everett, his eye at the eyepiece of the spotter scope, said triumphantly, "Thar she blew, Willie! And now, as soon as the films are developed, we'll know the score on that old planet Mars." He straightened up. There'd be no more to see now. And he and Willie Sanger shook hands solemnly. It was an historical occasion. Hope it didn't kill anybody. Any Martians, that is. Raj, did it hit dead center in Syrtis Major? Near as matters. I'd say it was maybe 1,000 miles off to the south. And that's damn close on a 50-million-mile shot. Willie, do you really think there are any Martians? Willie thought a second and then said, no, he was right. End of Earthmen Bearing Gifts by Frederick Brown.
While short, this tale has an ominous foretelling. We are just now beginning our exploration of Mars. We're sending up our crude machinery to send back information about the Red Planet. But have we ever asked the question whether we should do this? I, for one, don't know the answer to that. Our author for this one is Frederick Brown. He was an American science fiction and mystery writer. He is known for his use of humor and for his mastery of the short form, stories of 1 to 3 pages. He often used ingenious plot devices and surprise endings, like our story today. One of his stories, Arena, is officially credited for an adaptation as an episode of the American television series Star Trek. How about that? That's all we have time for this week. I want to thank Audible, Gladys Goodies, Matt Castone 25, Paula Hale, Brad Lane, Zuzu of the Wolves, Lamar Dunn, my buddy Jason Dowd, and Alan Winterroud for taking part today. Quite the list. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, just head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you'll find an amazing number of links that should fit every need. Do you want to help the show? The best thing you can do is to tell your friends all about it. And please do leave reviews or feedback wherever you listen. This helps us to grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.